We're heading towards spring, but it really starts looking like we're heading more toward winter. Next on Principles and Policies.
Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
It's great to be back with you. I don't know what makes you think we're heading into spring. It's 11 degrees here today.
But the days are getting longer. We've crossed that borderline, and now we're moving in towards spring. So.
Just remember that the first day of winter is the first day that the day after the first day of winter is the day that we get a longer day.
That's right. Absolutely. So you get the first day of winter, and then the days start getting longer, and it's great.
I agree. I'm already. Looking at the sun goes down later and later and later, I can almost work in the yard, except I'm cutting wood in the yard. So I don't like to do it when it's 11. It's not fun.
But again, I guess, Chuck, the reason why I opened with that was because it seems like we look around us and we look at what we can see, what we can feel, what we can touch, what we can taste. You know, our empirical senses tell us it's winter, right? But deep down inside, philosophically, logically, and with the hope that we have in us as human beings, we understand that there's a way to be optimistic about things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And to look at the positive sides of even, you know, very negative situations. I mean, yes, we could focus on, the freezing weather and how horrible it is for pets and animals and things of that nature. But that's what, let's leave that job to the mainstream media, because that seems to be what they want to focus on all the time, is all the downsides of everything.
Well, look, essentially their palette right now is all gray. Why? Because there's a Republican in the White House, and it's not Mitt Romney. It's not someone like a Mitt Romney or a John Kasich, who essentially...
He's trying very hard now to try to get in there. So.
Well, he's trying very hard to commit political suicide and make sure that he would never be nominated. Essentially, the Republicans should have learned with McCain and Romney that you cannot nominate someone who disrespects... the base. Disrespects is a wrong word. I can't think of anything stronger. Perhaps you could
reviles the base.
Reviles the base. That's a good one. There are vulgar terms that we can't go into here, and we probably shouldn't anyway. But they do those things to the base. And John Kasich is going to be one of those guys. Smile while they're doing it. There was a headline about someone claiming, who's written a book supposedly from the inside, that the day after Trump took office, he said he was going to do something to John Kasich that we can't reveal here.
And he did. He got right inside his head and took up residence there for the next 2 years.
Well, next four at least.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, and I mean, by next two, I meant from 16 to 18. But yeah, he's going to be living there for a couple more years.
Yeah, at least, and maybe longer. It just depends. We've been talking about some of this stuff. But the news media is... their entire palette is gray. We're all going to die. We're all going to be killed. There seems to be a cabal that has come. People are putting the destruction clock at 2 minutes to midnight.
Oh yes, that's our wonderful newly minted congressperson from New York. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because those of us who are older can remember Ted Danson's on WTBS, on big special that he did. We have 10 years left to save the planet.
Yep.
That was in 1992, if I'm not mistaken. 92 or 93. I time it because of where I was working at the time, and I know the dates I was in that laboratory. I remember laughing about it at the time. 10 more, how do you prove this? In 10 years, if we're all dead, do we say, gosh, he was right? And the answer is that it's an easy claim to make that we have 10 years left to save the planet. She said she's up, she's got it up to 12. Well, 12 years from now, plus Ted Danson's now 17 years plus 12 puts it at 29. So apparently Danson was off by a factor of 3. So we're all gonna be killed in 12 years, which would put us at what, 2031?
I guess.
So don't buy this, folks. Look, it's silliness. Look outside today and look at the weather patterns that we're dealing with in the globe right now and tell me that there is man-made. Obviously, they went away from global warming, which was what Danson was talking about in the early 90s. Look, Ted Danson was the front man. He's just too stupid to realize that the quote-unquote science that he was presenting was junk. That's fine. He's an actor. He's not a scientist. But there are scientists who were pushing this. Now, when you get into the bottom line, why were scientists pushing it? Why were scientists pushing this particular viewpoint?
I would assume it's for grant funding.
Exactly. It's for money. These guys, if they're not getting government grants to study why we're all going to die, then their particular professorship is a waste of time. This is a college is a publish or perish environment. So what do? To do that, you sit around and do research, and you cook up theories, and you cook up the most imaginative theory you can come up with, and dummy up some data, and you can say that's unfair. I say when you create mathematical formulas that eliminate historically known weather events in favor of weighting modern data, which has been doctored, to make a point, that's not science. That's propaganda. And that's exactly what scientists, especially in England and here, did the famous hockey stick graph. Well, look, what was the climate a little warmer during the 80s? Yeah, it was. And maybe the late 70s. Was it? Yeah, it was a little bit. And what caused that? Solar activity?
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that the sun drives our weather. Whether we like it or not, it has nothing to do with CO2 in the air. Can that have an effect? Yeah, sure. Sure can. Can it have as big effect as the sun? Nowhere near. Nowhere near. And the fact is that the atmosphere is pretty close to the saturation point with CO2. And what does it do? It actually makes growth patterns in plants better. I mean, we've been saying that for decades and people have been laughing. And yet harvests are essentially record. Unless in Ohio you run into situations with soybeans where it's too wet to get them out of the field, and by the time you go to harvest them, they're molded because it's been so wet. Okay, the Midwest had a wet summer. That does happen. We've also had dry summers. Gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Weather extremes, they happen almost every year and have in my entire lifetime, and in the lifetime of my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents, and for the entirety of history. There are times when it's super cold. There are times when it's super hot. There are times when it's super wet. There are times when it's super dry. These are called weather patterns, and they're driven.
Yes, they are.
It's a complex situation, and yet we all know about El Nino and La Nina, which are directly correlatable with sunspot activity.
That's true.
But that being said, let's go back to what we were talking about. this is the kind of junk reporting that you get. If you come out as a mainstream reporter and laugh at what they call AGW, anthropogenic global warming, it used to be called, now it's climate change, ACC, then you cannot get a place at the table. If you question the common consensus, you can't essentially work for a network. You flat out can't. You might become a minor player on the internet. But you
unless of course, you head up an organization like the Weather Channel.
Well, yeah, the guy who started the Weather Channel, whose name I can't remember. He used to be the weatherman on Good Morning America, I think. John something. I can't remember now what his name was. Mm-hmm. He always laughed about it. He says, "You guys are nuts. This is a normal weather pattern." And the Weather Channel at one point had Heidi Cullen came out and said anyone who doesn't believe in global warming should be ostracized, lose anything they have, like network positions, academic mm-hmm. positions. They should be drummed out of the Corps and essentially called pariahs.
Yeah, well, that's very tolerant of them.
Yeah, well, and the guys at East Anglia were doing the same. East Anglia University in England, where a lot of the Client Science headquarters is, and they are infamous for ginning things up. I mean, essentially just cutting it out of whole cloth. So people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, can say things like, "We have 12 years left to save the planet."
Which she just did.
And unfortunately, the young people out there who don't want the planet to end and don't know any better, don't know that this kind of rhetoric has been going on now for 27 years or greater. Actually, I can remember being told that in the late 80s and early 90s. So we're in the 30-year mark. People have been talking about this 10 years left to save the planet. After that, it's too late. Nothing we can do. It'll all die. Young people don't have that perspective that you and I have to remember this stuff.
That's true.
And when we tell them that, there's sort of an inbuilt la 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 la. You know, hands over the ears, close your eyes. And just go, la, 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 I can't hear you, I can't hear you, I can't see you. That's what we kind of get. Why? Well, because we're conservatives and, those are bad people.
Well, absolutely, we know that. The fact's already been proven by the media that, conservatives are bad people.
Yeah, right. Right. We're awful people.
Let's look at Exhibit A for that, Chuck, because Exhibit A of the fact that if you're conservative, you're a bad person, happened just this last weekend in Washington, D.C.
It did.
And if you haven't heard about this by now, by the time you hear our program, you have been on vacation in a country that doesn't get any kind of media, because this has gotten worldwide attention. It seems that the weekend in D.C. was a very interesting time, Chuck, because, as you know, it's late January, as we've talked about, and that means that every year, hundreds of thousands, if not million plus, people go to Washington, D.C. for one specific thing.
Yeah.
No, we're not talking about the Women's March, because that happened today. It's very interesting how all these groups are now piling in on this one around this one date, Chuck.
Look, this was easy to predict it was going to happen.
Well, sure, absolutely. And again, what you have is that we have, and as many people know, the March for Life, where pro-lifers from all over the country descend on D.C. to go meet with elected representatives, congresspeople, their senators. They do the thing on the Mall. It's an annual event. It has been an annual event for a long time. Well, this time around, you have something that you didn't have with previous administration. You actually had a president addressing the march, vice president addressing the march, and basically making commitments that they were going, they are going to uphold pro-life principles. You know what they said, that they wouldn't, that the president wouldn't sign anything that would promote abortion. So I read that as anything the Democrats want to do to try to reinstate the Mexico City policy, to try to expand you know, access through HHS, you know, funding blocks, that kind of thing. They didn't say anything about, you know, not signing a bill that continued funding for Planned Parenthood, which we've already seen in the past that this president has done after the Congress has failed in their fiduciary responsibility to eliminate such blood money to Planned Parenthood and their ilk. But, you know, it's a positive thing for the troops that go out there, you know, the pro-lifers who march dutifully out there to, you know, show their strength. And honestly, I get it. I've talked to people, you know, Chuck, you know, we've talked on this program. My position on it is that I'd rather spend the money I'd have to spend to go out to D.C. to go do that dog and pony show by donating it to a pregnancy care center or an adoption group, a pro-life adoption group, in order to help them to further their mission, which is actually what's going to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly.
It isn't going out there and listening to a bunch of politicians pontificate on how pro-life they are and then watch them vote because, well, we had no other choice, for policies that continue to fund and support and promote abortion on demand. So, you know, you have that situation going on. And again, people come from all over the country. Well, it just so happened that there was a group that came from Kentucky. As a matter of fact, it's a part of Kentucky that's so near and dear to the Cincinnati area, it's really kind of considered part of Ohio, I think, by a lot of people.
Well, that's it's suburban. It is definitely
suburban
Cincinnati,
but it's over the river in Kentucky, in Covington. Covington Catholic High School sent a group of their students to the March for Life in D.C. And, of course, you know, once the march is about over with, then everybody, you know, you have your predetermined, because there's so many people there, Chuck. You have to, like, if you're in a group, you have to predetermine ahead of time, well, we're going to meet here to get on the bus or to get, you know, get the van or whatever it is to get out of the mall area because, you know, you really need to get, you're not probably not staying anywhere near downtown, that's for sure.
Despite the media who does paint in palettes of gray, especially every year at the March for Life. In fact, what they do is they throw up a black curtain and just say, pretend like it didn't happen. Hundreds of thousands of people come.
Yes, that's true. And again, if you ask some of these people, if they, you know, well, we need to get our message out to the American people. Well, you're not going to get it because the mainstream media is going to, they're going to run to the Planned Parenthood and the NARAL protesters, and that's all they're going to hear from. That's, you know, because it's free advertising for them. So why wouldn't they take advantage of it if you're spending all the money to give them free advertising? But on this one, the Covington Catholic High School group was waiting at a predetermined location for getting on their bus to get out from the mall and go home. Well, remember I said, Chuck, that it seems like other groups seem to be camping in on this time frame. We know that the Women's March.
Well, look,
Lefty liberal pink hat wearing. Alyssa Milano's of the world, you know, everybody's an evil white supremacist, and so we must fight against all of them. They've picked so that their march is the next day. So they were on the March for Life was on a Friday, they're on Saturday. Well, it just so happens that another group has picked the same day to, you know, jump, or at least a couple of other groups, because supposedly on this day as well, it was the Indigenous Peoples March. And yes, that by that means the First Nations folks, you know, what you would call American Indian activists.
The more radical element of the Native Americans.
And some of them are not the radical element. I mean, but many of them are. And so what happened was, as these young people from Covington Catholic High School, which is a fairly conservative area of suburban Cincinnati, Many of the young men in the group were wearing Make America Great Again hats. Well, you know, that's not really a surprise. You're in D.C., Trump's president, you're pro-life. He's, you know, they just, he and his vice president have just addressed the march on two different time frames, basically saying the same thing, that they're going to uphold pro-life principles. You're probably feeling pretty good about it. So you're putting on the gear. You're wearing the hat. Well, they were, as they were waiting on a bus there, and again, if you only saw the mainstream media's edited clip of the situation, you would say that these young men from high school were, you know, horrible, teasing, disrespectful instigators. But then again, it's coming from the mainstream media. And that's what happened, Chuck. So what happened was these a group of black Hebrew Israelites.
Oh boy, the Hebrew
Israelites.
I've
never heard of this group before.
Oh gosh, you haven't. Okay, yeah, I have.
So I was just kind of like, okay, that's very interesting. But I guess that these individuals are very radical, alt, lefty types as well, and they were screaming obscenities and choice bon mots at these young people standing there waiting on their bus. And they were doing it for quite a while. Well, at the same time, across the street from where they were a gathering of these indigenous peoples group led by a gentleman by the name of Nathan Phillips, who decided to cross the street and come over. And according to the media, you know, first media accounts, that they were coming over there to try to interject themselves in between the young people and these black Hebrew Israelite agitators, like trying to be peacemakers, because we all know that you know, those groups are inherently just peacemakers. Well, okay, there was a situation where this Mr. Phillips, who had a native skin covered drum with a drumstick, a beater, was standing in front of one of these young men who happened to be wearing a Make America Great Again hat, and he was chanting and beating his drum in front of this young man, looking at him eye to eye, but basically, Chuck, closer than I am to my microphone right now,
right.
And I'm pretty much about 2 inches away from my microphone.
If your mic is like mine, you're right on top of it.
You're right on top of it, and so was Nathan Phillips on top of this young man who was standing there, beating his drum right up in his face. I'm not sure how that was supposed to create peace and understanding and defuse the situation, but supposedly, according to the mainstream media, that's what it was about. And the mainstream media lost their complete and utter composure over the fact that the young man was standing there with a small smile on his face. I think probably was having difficulty trying to figure out what in the world this guy was up to. And I mean, I'm looking at a photo right now on one of the news sites. This beater was a fairly significant looking drum stick, and he's almost touching this young man with the drum while he's pounding on it with this stick. I'm amazed that this young man stood as unflinchingly still as he did. And there have been interviews since then that the young man was basically like, I really wasn't sure what to do, but I knew that turning away and walking away from him would be considered disrespectful, so I didn't, which is interesting. But this all blew up in the media, and of course, then they painted that this Nathan Phillips, who's this Native American activist, that these young men were taunting and disrespecting and being completely, sadly disrespectful, I guess is the best word, to a Vietnam veteran. Well, first of all, I have to stop and say, these kids didn't know these individuals from Adam, and they had people coming and getting up in their face. What do they know from where they, if they served in the military, if they were, because I'm looking at the picture, and Phillips is not wearing anything that has any military insignia, regalia, or a uniform on. So there's nothing to show. He's not wearing a big hat that says, hi, I'm a Vietnam vet. These kids didn't have any idea who these people were. All they knew was they were standing there waiting on the bus, and all of a sudden, because of their hats that they were wearing, that people decided to just come up and get in their faces and screaming and yelling. Now, this student, his name's Nicholas Sandman, basically was sitting there just kind of like, okay, well, where do I go? Because he had all of his other schoolmates behind him. I don't think this kid could go anywhere. He was surrounded in the front by Phillips and a couple of other folks banging on drums, and I mean, they're within, like, breathing distance of him. He had these black Hebrew Israelite activists screaming and calling him all kinds of names, and had been for a little while. I'm really proud of this young man that he actually didn't, A, blow his cool and shove somebody, because that probably would have been my first response, is get out of my face. And he stood there and kind of held tight. But then, by doing that, in the eyes of the mainstream media, in the eyes of the leftist Hollywood types, in the eyes of a bunch of politicians who ought to know better, he became the most hated person in America. And it was a classic media lynching. I mean, all kinds. These kids were called all kinds of names. Their motives were inferred, impugned, and, you know, the worst possible things that you could possibly hope a human being to do, they were being blamed for doing for just standing
there. Hollywood producers, specifically for the Disney Corporation, saying things like they should be fed into a wood chipper.
Well, yeah, there was that too. That tells you a lot about where Disney is at these days.
Right.
So, you know, think about that too. But as it went, and of course, you know, these young men, they're going to a Catholic school, so they, you know, they're being taught how to be leaders, how to be men of honor, how to be respectful, how to protect the weak and innocent, because obviously, you know, that's the reason why they're for March for Life. So, what happened? Did everybody rise up in defense of them? Oh, no. Let's see. Their principal, their superintendent, the Bishop of Covington, and the Archbishop of Louisville all immediately rushed to condemn their actions and to express their deep regret and sorrow and apologies to this Native American activist because, oh, you know, they disrespected a war veteran. Well, roll the clock ahead 24 hours, and we come to find out a couple, three, four more things. Number one, somebody had done a lengthy video of what happened from before the time when these black Hebrew Israelite activists started coming up and screaming at them, all the way through the entire encounter. And when you looked at the totality of the video evidence, you realized something very quickly. These boys were being scissored. Scissoring, Chuck, is where a liberal leftist group attempts to create a media issue in order to paint people in a horrible light and to get sympathy for their own cause. And they got scissored because the black Hebrew Israelites were on one side of the blade and Nathan Phillips and his folks were on the other side of the blade because they came loaded with cameras to take pictures of all this and spin it in the media how horrible it was that these white middle-class Catholic boys with the MAGA hats, you know, were the worst of the worst of America. You know, they represented the white supremacist, you know, oppressive, you know, you name the epithet that they threw out there. It was out there. Matter of fact, it's still out there. I'm just looking at a post here on Breitbart News because they've been pulling this stuff. Well, there's a, if you look, they say like NewsGuard, which is a publication ranking extension run by establishment media figures along with former Clinton, Obama, and Bush administration members, has rated a number of websites which wrongly attacked the students of Covington Catholic as trustworthy. So this is the, you know, the media is going to police themselves on what's fake news or not. And so what they're now saying is all of these media outlets that came out there and beat up on these kids originally are trustworthy. Well,
many of them,
Chuck, have not retracted their position after the full evidence comes out. Oh, and by the way, we just come to find out that Nathan Phillips, the man in question, did not serve in Vietnam. He did serve. He was in the Marine Corps. Okay, that's great. but he's not a Vietnam vet, and now he's portraying it as I'm a Vietnam era vet, which is okay.
We'll give it to him. He is a very, but that's not what he originally claimed.
No, and that's not what the media picked up on either. And so you had all this stuff, and he was, you know, supposedly he was being, and of course he played it up too. You know, that he was, it was saddened to him that they were so disrespectful and blah, 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 blah. And it's like you look at the full video and you realize, wait a minute, those kids weren't doing anything that, only in your wickedest dreams could you have thought that those kids were being disrespectful or taunting or otherwise. Could they have done those kind of things? Yeah, sure they could have, Chuck. But video evidence is proving that they didn't.
Right.
And so now there's been, a bit of a retraction from the Archbishopric in Kentucky. But so far, their school is still saying that, well, we're going to investigate this and there are likely to be expulsions. And it's like, well, the only people that need to be expelled from that Covington Catholic High School seem to be the principal and the superintendent, who rushed to condemn their own students before having the facts.
How about the Archbishop of the diocese?
Well, you know, that has to go through different channels. Go through the Vatican and the Pope, and whether or not you're replacing an Archbishop or not, and of course, Chuck, I mean, they're not even replacing bishops and archbishops who have been embroiled in and, in some instances, found guilty of child molestation. I'm not sure they're going to be taking this archbishop out because he wouldn't back his own Catholic school students. But the point is, if I'm a parent of one of those boys, I'm like, okay, you won't support my son, my child, so I'm not going to support the school anymore. We're leaving. You know, Covington Catholic maybe needs to have a little bit of a boycott by the parents of these students who honestly were taken to D.C., were embroiled in the middle of this controversy, and who were basically stabbed in the back by those people who should be standing up to defend them because they don't want to appear non-PC, and they don't want to appear like they're being prejudiced against all of these lefty groups that use these kind of things as levers in order to push their leftist agenda. Oh, did I also mention that Nathan Phillips, the individual in question, isn't pure as the driven snow either? It seems that either the evening before or that evening, he tried to disrupt a Catholic mass at the National Basilica. A pro-life mass by running in and banging on his drums and trying to disrupt the service inside the building. Sounds to me like he's kind of showing a pattern here of not being sadly put upon poor veteran of Vietnam that he was promoting himself to be.
I'm seeing a story that's starting to develop here. CNN is attempting to slough blame for the fake news about the whole Covington High School business on a foreign actor. In other words, Russian bots caused CNN and other news outlets to come out with fake news about the Covington Catholic kids.
No, I think what caused them to come out with fake news is that they thought that it fit their storyline. It fit their storyline.
Oh, of course.
Here are these white Catholic middle class middle American Trump supporters, and look at just how obnoxious and Neanderthal like they are. That's what they were. That's what they were after. And they didn't get it. But the point is, it isn't just CNN and the leftist media, Chuck. National Review.
Oh, yeah, right.
Published an article titled, and I'll give you the title of the article to tell you how, you know, unbiased they are. Quote, "The Covington students might as well have just spit on the cross," unquote. That was the article title of which they basically said that, oh, they're mocking a serious, frail-looking older man and gloat in their momentary role as Roman soldiers to his Christ.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I did read that.
Let's just... Okay, National Review has gone so never Trump that they have lost any kind of remote objectivity. I used to read them, and I honestly had a subscription a long time ago.
Oh, I did too. I used to subscribe years ago.
I won't even, you pull up National Review online, unless you get something like this, I don't even want to touch it.
Well, that was Rich Lowry, and he wrote two articles. Yep. The first one was that screed. The second one was attempting to back out of it, and the third one was essentially an apology. But it's too little too late.
Yeah.
You sent me one that, by a guy named Hugh Hewitt, who is, if I'm not mistaken, he's Ohio based. He's from Dayton area, isn't he?
No, that's Mike Gallagher. I don't think Hewitt's from Ohio.
But in any case, Hugh Hewitt came out and just said execrable things about these young kids.
Well, he basically went, and I think he referenced, what was it? Proverbs.
He referenced
a quote out of the scripture. I don't have it in front of me right now, but basically it's that a soft word turns away wrath, or a quiet answer turns away wrath. And he was basically condemning the kids for not following the scriptures in that way. And as you looked at the video, you're like, that's exactly what they were doing. They were not engaging. They were not taunting. They were not fighting back. They were standing there and being quiet while these, paid professional activists are doing this scissor move to try to create this meme, which they effectively did for a little while. They couldn't hold it up because under further scrutiny and under the fact that there was more than one perspective videotaping the event, they didn't quite pull off what they wanted to pull off. Now, is the left still fawning over Nathan Phillips? Oh, of course they are. It's now it's the pressure is on that the Covington Catholic boys, they need to invite him in and have a dialogue. Chuck, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If somebody breaks down my door or tries to threaten me, I'm not going to stand there and have a dialogue with
No, them. It's the time for dialogue is not there. Now, I think these young men showed remarkable restraint. And it wasn't, by the way, as I recall, I've seen the pictures. Now, the young men were in the front, but there were girls in that group too.
No, it wasn't just boys. I mean, no. They make it look like it was like the Covington Catholics, like a boys' school. And it's like, no, there's boys and girls. It was basically a school trip for their classes.
They were there for the right. They were there for the March for Life.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, flat out. I mean, they got school credit for that because they're engaging in the kind of activity that the school is encouraging, and that is being engaged in your government.
Now, I'll tell you what's going to happen next, Jack. Crystal ball time here. I'll tell you what's going to happen next. You're going to have leftist activists who are going to scream that we need to completely take away any kind of funding, and that includes reimbursements for mandates to any private school or Catholic school, because going on a trip like that is purely political. It has no educational value whatsoever, and because taxpayer money may have been commingled in some way, then we need to pull away all taxpayer funding from Catholic schools.
Going back to what we were talking about, it will specifically, what you're talking about will be some kind of a ban, and it will specifically exclude things like going to global warming rallies.
You can do that because that's purely educational, Chuck.
Yeah. Picketing for certain kinds of other activities, attending rallies for all kinds of nefarious liberal causes will be excluded specifically. It's sort of like if you ever looked at the tenets of McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Act, all these companies, all these people, there were all kinds of exclusions about who was allowed to donate to political candidates, businesses, all these, there was a whole list. who was specifically excluded from that ban? Labor unions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Big shock. Labor unions were specifically exempted from that ban. So that's the kind of law that you get, the great John McCain. You know, if you're going to ban businesses, you have to ban labor unions as well. But look, Barry, what we're seeing is something the Bible talks about. And there's an important Bible passage, and it's Proverbs 18:17. And I'll read it to you in the English Standard Version, which is the one we use at our church. It's virtually the same in any version. But what it is, it says, "The one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him."
Absolutely.
What does that mean? It means if you allow one side to dominate in getting their story out, the other side can get steamrolled. And this is what the mainstream media tried to do. They also tried to do this. Remember the BuzzFeed article that came out and said that Trump had ordered his attorney to lie to Congress and to make all this stuff up, and that Mueller, it was a leak from Mueller's team that this had happened, and they had verified it with several independent sources and blah. And what immediately happened? Mueller came out and said, "No, this is nonsense. This is, we don't know where you got this from. It wasn't from us because it didn't happen." Okay. Why did Mueller do that? Because he was getting questions that he couldn't answer from alternative media. Because let's face it, CBS, NBC, PBS, CNN, ABC, that whole cabal, they're not going to ask those questions. They're going to take as gospel anything that comes out, that BuzzFeed report. Now, does BuzzFeed have a good reputation for the stuff that they put out? No, they have a terrible reputation. They were almost out of business a couple years ago, basically because they just spread nonsense. Well, what was the first thing? I always love it when news organizations like the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Boston Globe and the Los Angeles Times, name a newspaper, name a big newspaper. What happens when they get caught with their pants down and they find out that the story that they printed is at best half truth? "We stand behind our story and our reporter."
Yep.
What does that mean? When I hear that phrase, I'm like, you know you're busted. You know you're busted.
Yep.
How many times recently? Now, would a newspaper or a news organization like CNN or NBC, CBS, MSNBC, name one, if they did a false story in the past, would they retract it? Well, if they got forced to retract, it may have been front page of the paper above the fold line. The story may have been, but when it comes back out, when the retraction comes, it's on page 32D, just before the classified ads, in a place that nobody ever reads. That's why journalism has such a bad. Let's talk about that just for a second. I want to get back to what you were talking about because it's important. Let's talk about journalism. I always laugh when I hear people say, "Well, journalism used to have integrity and it used to used to get at the truth and blah blah blah." Journalism has never been that. It's always been partisan, at least in the United States and also in Britain. It's always been a bastion of partisan hackery. The problem was, in the old days, everybody was partisan, and it was a mixed bag. You had partisans on one side of the issue, you had partisans on another side of an issue. There were places like New York City had 7 or 8 newspapers, and they all had a different viewpoint. And you could get that viewpoint by reading the editorials and, you know, reading the you could get the feel for the editorial policy of the paper by reading the articles. So you knew how to judge it. When was the last time we had a town? There are a couple of towns with a couple of newspapers left, New York being one, but they're all left. They're all left of center, and they have been for years. The Columbus Dispatch, if I remember, there was the Journal, Citizen Journal, and the Dispatch. There were two newspapers here in what in the 80s up to the 80s. I forget when the CJ folded, in maybe in the 90s. Supposedly they had supposedly different editorial policies. You couldn't really tell the difference between those two papers at the end. Do you remember when the CJ folded? It was they were going to go into a joint operating agreement with the Dispatch.
I don't remember now.
Yeah, it's been within memory. That's the problem, Barry. You don't have any. Fox News is the closest thing we have to a differing editorial viewpoint. And they're center left rather than ultra left, like CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS. Yeah. That's the difference. You've got a center, and center left looks conservative from when you're comparing it to the rest.
Yeah, it's true.
You've got some terrible partisans on Fox News for the left. Shepard Smith, terrible, obvious. Oh, he hates Trump with a resounding hatred. And that's the problem you're seeing in these magazines. Guys like Hugh Hewitt. Guys like Rich Lowry. The reason the Weekly Standard crashed and burned so spectacularly and took the mantle from the anti-Trump journal and put it on NRO, National Review Online, was because they were so virulently anti-Trump that nobody would read it.
Oops.
And the financiers of that thing, let's face it, when you're putting out a magazine these days, not that many people read magazines anymore. Where do you read? You read online. Well, when you're putting out stuff like that that chases your base away, the people who are financing you and propping you up and giving you the operating capital you need to continue start looking at you and saying, you know, This is not going to work out well. And that's exactly what happened with the Weekly Standard. Crystal's yellow sheet. And if you don't know what that means, the old yellow sheets, they were partisan, cheap newspapers and printed on paper that yellowed almost immediately because it was cheap paper. And they called them yellow sheets. They were essentially propaganda rags. They were fake news, you know. And that's exactly what the Weekly Standard had turned into. It was also an establishment piece. There was essentially no globalist Republican could do wrong, and that's where the fight is here with the Never Trumpers. They don't like the fact that Donald Trump is not a globalist; he is a nationalist.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the United States comes first. However, Trump has said many times, we rely on the rest of the world to be our market and to provide us raw materials and also to do trade with things we can't do here. We all know that. We're in a global economy. We can't walk away from it. I send stuff out every week all over the globe. I go in the post office and they sort of look at me and we're like, where are you sending to today? You know, Singapore, Africa, you know, Burkina Faso, China, Japan, you know, Canada, Mexico, Brazil, name someplace. South Africa, I've sent Australia, New Zealand. New Zealand's a little harder. They have weird laws. But the fact is we live in a global economy. But we have people who are like, we need global governance. No, we do not. And we do not want to meld into one big, happy global family, because what does that mean? That means we have to give up our American uniqueness to become just like somebody else so we can blend together. That's what the whole push for open borders is. It goes beyond And this government shutdown that we're dealing with right now in late January of 2019, January 25th to be exact. I forgot to put the date stamp in there. There it is. Or January 27th. What we're dealing with is an argument over whether our borders should be open. My wife and I were just railing against the fact. Have you tried to get a driver's license in Ohio recently, Barry?
No, mine's not up yet. So,
well, be prepared because you got to take your marriage license, your birth certificate, a social security card. In some cases, if you are on social security, you have to take your SS-1099 form with you. You have to take all this paperwork. Why? Because even though years ago, Ohio nullified the federal law that required us to go to real ID in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. I remember it very well. Ohio was one of the states that nullified and the feds backed off. All of a sudden, your driver's license is going to have all this information in it for you to be able to get on a plane and fly to California, New York, any state in the union from here.
Well, considering that California has gone completely socialist and that New York just legalized abortion up to birth, I don't think I'm going to either one of those states anytime soon.
I mentioned those. Florida. I mentioned those because they're places you would normally fly rather than drive. Just because, at a convenience sake, if you're going on a business trip, you don't want to drive to New York. You really want to fly and take a cab or rent, public transport. But that being said, at the same time that Congress is passing this restriction on our person, you can't just buy a ticket and get on a plane and fly anymore. You have to show all this ID that has all this information. But we also can't put up a wall to keep foreigners from simply invading the country to control immigration and visas. They don't want that. Mm-hmm. They want wide open borders. And so while we're suddenly opening the borders to foreigners, we're making it impossible for citizens and residents to travel without extensive paperwork. What's wrong with this picture? Nobody seems to be gathering the irony. Tear the wall down on borders and, just open them wide open to let everybody come in. But don't try to travel without your papers. And we're rapidly achieving a society where it's like, let me see your papers, please. I don't want to live in that kind of society.
No.
Now, I have no objections to controlled legal immigration. My nephew came here legally from Mexico. He was adopted by my brother. And the joke in the family is when you ask him what he thinks about the wall, people think they've got, we'll show you. And they ask Antonio what he thinks about the wall. And he's like, build it and build it high and strong.
Okay.
Because he's an American citizen. He knows what it means. He knows what it means. And unfortunately, guys like Crystal and Lowry and Jonah Goldberg and all these bad players are showing their true colors. They thought they saw a racist incident by watching a little clip. And remember that ESV, the Proverbs 18:17, what does it say? The one who states his case first seems right until the other one comes and examines him. The fact is, they went off half-cocked. Everybody was doing what they call virtue signaling. Everybody wanted a virtue signal. Look, we're against racism. Everybody should be against racism. I agree with you. Until all of a sudden, we get what do we get? We get the rest of the film that shows the black Hebrew Israelites, and I don't throw in black because that's part of the title. The black Hebrew Israelites harassing and saying the vilest things to these kids. And then this Native American fellow gets in their face. Look, here are the facts. They were there to harass. The only reason people set stuff up to be on March for Life weekend is to harass March for Lifers. That has been,
of course.
That has been, that date has been owned for over 40 years by the March for Life. And when it started, sadly, where was the Protestant church? Nowhere to be found. It was Catholics who really were in control of the pro-life movement for the first many years until the Protestants said, okay, this could have some effect. And thank God for our Catholic brothers who essentially went and did the work at first. And they're still very active.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Because when you can get a private school to send kids on a bus to D.C. to go to that thing, it's great. However, we've talked about why we think that that's kind of a... We understand why, but is it effective? What happens is it's taken the left long enough to figure it out, but now they're diluting it by holding the Women's March and these other things on the same day. Why? Well, it gives the cameras something to do. They know they should be out filming what's going on in the mall with the March for Life, but instead they're out there doing these peripheral things, the Women's March and the, you know, with the pink hats and the and that kind of stuff, and whatever this Native American gathering was. They're all there to steal the thunder of the March for Life, flat out.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's all it's for, and to create incidents like we saw this last weekend. That's exactly what it's for. The problem was that somebody released the whole tape.
Exactly.
And that's what this proverb is all about.
That's right. So, you know, again, there's a lot of good in this to come as well, because now people are learning that there are tactics that are going to be used against even children in order to advance a liberal progressive political agenda, to be prepared for it, and to remember scripturally to be wise as a serpent and innocent as a dove, which I believe these young people exemplified readily. If you look at that again, and I would suggest people go take a look at the full video. Look at the full, recording of what actually took place. I think we can learn a lot from these young people, and I think that a lot of people can learn a lot about the tactics of the left from seeing this engagement.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And honestly, Chuck, the more that's coming out, the more it's really starting to sound like that this was a targeted attack against people because of what they believe. Where is their First Amendment protections? That's what everybody should be asking themselves. And especially those who have charge over those young people, like the Archbishop, the Bishop of Covington, the superintendent, and the principal of Covington Catholic High School. They need to go back and reread their Bible, because they were in a rush to judgment. And I believe even in the Catholic faith, there are charges that could be brought up against them for rash judgment and calumny. Which,
yeah, well,
should be interesting to see if that happens.
That's not going to happen.
You're probably right.
Sad to say, it's not going to happen. They got other fish to fry with other issues with Catholic priests and bishops, and they're not going to do that. It's going to be embarrassing. Unfortunately, it is embarrassing, and it should be embarrassing. I would be willing to bet that there is a hue and cry that we won't hear about within the diocese about what to do about this. Because there are parishioners who are hopping mad over what happened to their children while they were...
Absolutely.
That's what's going on. Will we hear about that? No, probably not. Probably not. You might hear about it because you have a lot of feelers out in the political realm, and have a lot of connections to groups in Cincinnati that are right to life probably have a finger on the pulse of this thing. In fact, I would be, if I were you, I'd ask. In any case, we are out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And you can comment on our on our podcast. All the podcasts that we've ever made are now up and running, as I promised. And this one will be up fairly quickly after it runs. So again, www.principledpolicy.com, and join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.